You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
October 23rd, 2015. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola, and I am broadcasting from the Chicago suburbs. Thanks for joining me today on RBN. Their website is republicbroadcasting.org. Please also visit spingola.com for links for today's program. Just click on the radio schedule button on the left. Also visit screeningsandyhook.net for information about my newest book, Screening Sandy Hook: Causes and Consequences, an expose on big pharma and big government. Please also visit SpingolaSpeaks.net, created by one of our longtime listeners. Individuals may subscribe to SpingolaSpeaks.net and post comments about the program. During the program, email any questions or comments to comment@spingola.com. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by visiting spingola.chatango.com. And I believe the corporationnation.chatango.com is also open tonight. All righty. We may not take calls, but if we do, you can call in at 800-313-9443. But please wait until we open the phone lines if we do decide to take calls. My guest tonight is Colin Flaherty. He is an award-winning journalist and the author of the new book, Don't Make the Black Kids Angry: The Hoax of Black Victimization and Those Who Enable It. It came out on March 1st, 2015. It is a great, great book. He also wrote White Girl Bleed a Lot, The Return of Racial Violence to America, and How the Media Ignore It. That was published in September of 2013. It is a number one best-selling book. And he also wrote Knockout Game, A Lie. I'm proud to say that I have all three of those books, and all three of the books are about black mob violence, black-on-white crime, and, the Knockout Game. Colin's YouTube page, the one that is still extant, is youtube.com/user/ColinFlaherty712. Now, Colin, welcome. You have had one YouTube channel taken down.
Yeah, okay, we'll start with that story. I did a video that was, I saw a video, a news story. I think it was out of the Cincinnati area. And it was a white kid surrounded by a bunch of black kids, but everybody's face was blurred and there was no audio. So I called the mom up and I said, "Hey, can I see the original of that?" She goes, "Sure." I posted it and it was way more sinister. It was a white kid being harassed, taunted, threatened, and finally they beat the crap out of this kid. So I posted it, and soon after, I get a notice from YouTube saying, "Colin, you're glorifying violence against children." I said, "I'm not glorifying it. I'm exposing it." The next day, my channel was down. But you know what? A couple of days later, I just started fresh, and I'm back. This was like 6 weeks ago. I'm back about 80% to where I was before they shut it down. So it's all good.
Great. Great. Well, people can subscribe at whitegirlbleedalot.com. You can subscribe to that website for messages. Which I did earlier today. And I did get a message that said, to confirm, and it gave your old YouTube site that went.
Yeah, I got to fix that.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, I hope that the listeners will subscribe, and I do hope that you will read the book, Don't Make the Black Kids Angry. It is an amazing book. I could hardly put it down this week, seriously.
Oh, thanks.
Since we decided to do the program, I purchased the book. I had your other two. And, oh, my gosh, it's just fabulous. And of course, I figured out what your favorite comment was in there that Mr. Cleaver said. And I, your writing is remarkable. I mean, it's very straightforward, and well, you just don't leave anything out. I think it's the way that you write. Go ahead.
Thanks. You know, when I set out to write this book, there was so much material, so much black mob violence, black on white crime. I decided I was going to write this book and all my articles without racism, without rancor, but really, but almost most importantly, without apologies. So just write it straightforward, lots and lots of links, lots of stories. And as you know, Deanna, not too much in there on causes or solutions. This is a book for people who deny we have a problem. And so when you're done reading this book, you can pretty much deny anything you want on this planet, but you cannot deny there's something very, very wrong happening in this country. And there are way too many reporters and public officials who are ignoring, denying, condoning, excusing, encouraging, and even lying about it.
Indeed. And I didn't really realize that it had gotten so bad in so many places. I mean, you were talking about little places that you wouldn't expect that there would be mob violence. You just wouldn't expect it. Chicago, we hear every weekend, okay? We hear about all these gang-related shootings. I mean, it's just common. We expect it. But... we always attribute it to, well, it's, you know, something that's happening in South Chicago, and it isn't relevant to us. But you have made it relevant to everybody that lives in every area where this has happened. And it's happened in so many places.
You know, you might remember from the book, we really don't do that much stuff on Chicago. I don't do that much stuff anymore on Chicago, Detroit, New York, Boston, Philly, Baltimore, Wilmington, Camden, Trenton, hundreds of cities, you know, these big chocolate cities where this violence is so common. It's too easy. The stories that I'm writing now, and a lot of the stories I focused on and Don't Make the Black Kids Angry, were places like, how about Des Moines, Iowa? How about Cedar Rapids, Iowa? How about Peoria, Illinois? How about Springfield, Missouri, Greensboro, all these little towns all over the country and other places where, you know, the people who live there are kind of in denial that anything's happening. I'm thinking of Seattle and Portland, Oregon in particular. There's just a lot going on. You know, the book actually ended up just a little bit thicker than I wanted it to be. But here, so I remember I was finishing the book. I hadn't even counted the pages. I hit the button, count the pages. The book in its first draft was 950 pages long.
Oh, no.
So imagine what you read. I had to cut out half of that.
Oh, my gosh.
So I cut out some stuff on the knockout game. I cut out some stuff on schools. I pretty much said, listen, here's a bunch of links. If you're, you know, if you really want to know more about it here, and there's too much happening. I can't keep track of it all.
Yes, and I really appreciate your links. And speaking of the length of the book, you also make mention, well, you thought that the length of each chapter should be a certain, you know, it should be short to keep people's attention and whatnot. And you said that, oh, you'd gone over in this one chapter that you mentioned that you referred to. And I thought that was really, really clever. But honestly, you have obviously made it very concise, so that people can understand. And I was amazed, really amazed, that this was happening in so many small places. And
you know, we don't do a lot of statistics in the book, right? I mean,
no.
The statistics, when I wrote White Girl Bleed a lot, my publisher said, Colin, maybe we should put more statistics in there. And I thought, look, the numbers are so ridiculously out of whack. I mean, why do we even need to mention that black crime versus white crime is 3 times, 6 times, 10 times, 100, 1,000 times worse?
Mm-hmm.
Depending on what you're talking about. I thought everybody knew that. Well, everybody doesn't know that. There's lots of people in denial about that. But we don't do a lot of statistics. We just do stories. You know, one, you know, worse than the next. And these are stories that people, you know, even people, I get a lot of mail where people say, Colin, I live in that town for 20 years. I've never heard these stories. These are new stories, by the way.
Wow. That is amazing. And it's because of the media. The media covers this up. Why is it that they cover it up? You referred to the reason For instance, if it's a business decision in some respects, because people don't want to understand, or the business people don't want the customers to be kept away from the stores, so they really don't talk about it in the media, so that they don't lose business. Is that correct?
Well, let's what I love doing? I love every question to ask. I just love going to a specific story to illustrate what you just said. So that when you said that, the first story that popped into my mind was Virginia Beach.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so.
Oh, that's
That's it. I mean, how can we get our mind around what you and I are about to tell the listeners? If I say there are 40,000 black people in Virginia Beach during what they're calling a Black Beach Week, and all coming from the local black colleges in and around that area, there's half a dozen of them, and kids from all of these other metro areas, and they just create mayhem and violence, and they destroy property, a lot of it on video. I went and grabbed all the 911 calls as well. I mean, it's hard for people to get their minds around how really nasty that was. But that's half the story, right? But the other half of the story is, after this tsunami of violence ended, you know, the merchants had a meeting, and the town meeting, about 200 people showed up, and no city council member showed up. They all said they didn't want to draw attention to it. And so the merchants are standing up, and some of them said that too. But the other ones are saying, hey, people, we have a problem on our hand. This was like the worst one we've had for a while, but this is not the first time it's happened. First big time, you know, back in the late 80s, they even, you know, one of the big rap groups even made a rap song about it. They called it Welcome to the Terror Dome. I think this was NWA. And so lots of video, lots of tests, you know, lots of eyewitnesses and police reports. And it just goes on from there. And by the way, the whole idea of callers, well, I hope we do get a chance to take some calls because, people, they just love calling and saying, what's happening in my town?
Yes. Okay. We'll take callers in the second hour then.
You know, one of the things you mentioned was, you're in the suburbs of Chicago.
Right.
I get a ton of email from Chicago cops. And you know, the story in Chicago to me is not the south side of Chicago where it's a war zone where cops won't even go there. And when they do go there, you know, the black people are pointing their fingers at them as if they're shooting them with a gun. They're yelling CCK, Chicago cop killer. Cops are subject to relentless harassment, threats, violence. The story now is how black people are moving, they hop on one of your lovely trains up there, and they go to the north side, to the, what do you call it? I always get the Magnificent Mile confused with the Miracle Mile. Anyway, the upscale place, lots and lots of violence against the shoppers and tourists and residents of these upscale places. And the cops are going, why isn't the newspaper talking about this? This is unbelievable.
Yes.
By the way, Chicago has the best police blog in America. It's called Second City Cop.
Yes, so, you referred to that.
And you know, for anybody in the Chicago area, or if you want to get a glimpse as to what cops are saying about what's really going on, check out Second City Cop. After, of course, you check out my YouTube channel, but.
Right.
But that's cops talking.
Yes. Wow. Well, they do, the criminals do come out to the suburbs. My family has been a victim of people who've come out to the suburbs, and you have to keep your doors locked. And one night, the husband fell asleep on the couch and in the downstairs area, and his wife left her purse on the piano, and she'd gone up to bed, and he'd fallen asleep. And usually when he would go up to bed, he'd lock up. Well, somebody just opened his door, walked in, grabbed the purse off of the piano, and drove off with one of their cars.
You know what? If that's all that happened to that family, I would say you guys got off lucky.
Yes.
I mean, right now, so a few months ago, I decided I was going to start documenting not just this enormous quantity of crime, how that's wildly out of proportion. I thought I was going to I started spending more time with the quality of the crime, this horrific sociopathic quality of this crime. I mean, there's an enormous amount of sexual abuse directed at older women. I'm talking about over 50, over 60. I'm looking at two stories today out of Mississippi, a 78-year-old woman. I mean, I've got dozens of these recent. So there's really some of this crime. I mean, people say, well, it's poverty and, you know, it's this or it's that. You know, they were robbing somebody. There's really a joyful aspect to it. They really love the violence. And I always think the robbery is kind of secondary to the delight that they take in the sadistic nature of a lot of this violence. And if you ask me for one example, I'll give you 1,000, so be careful.
Well, you mentioned repeatedly in the book that they were laughing. And I thought, my gosh, these people are really monsters. And the age of these criminals, they're teenagers.
A lot of teenagers, but still, you know, the older folks are getting in on the act too. And that's, remember, that's only half of it. The other half is how the newspapers are just aggressively ignoring and denying it. Like, for example, today, this is today in the Washington Post. It's a big headline. 5 robberies in 40 minutes on Capitol Hill and in a nearby neighborhood of Southeast. Anybody who hasn't been to Washington, Southeast is known as the black part of Washington. They have a new neighborhood there called the Navy Yards. So Washington Post, 5, big headline, 5, you know, 5 people robbed, 40 minutes. Well, this is an almost identical headline to just a couple days ago, same newspaper, except it was only 3 victims. But here's where it gets weird. In today's story, it goes, they were held up by a black gun, but we don't have any description, we only have a scanty description of the people involved in this violence. So, you know, I have an investigative hypothesis that the people involved were black, but I had to call my friends on the DC police force. They laughed when I asked them if there were groups of white kids storming through Washington DC robbing people. That's not happening. And so the Washington DC is a place where, I mean, how hard is it to go to pick up see a talking head talking about how black people are relentless victims of relentless white racism all the time, everywhere. That explains everything. This is an article of faith in Washington, but that's a fairy tale. That's the greatest lie of our generation. But in Washington, whether you're talking about the metro, whether you're talking about bike trails, whether you're talking about Capitol Hill, with the shopping districts, the colleges, it's one hot mess of black violence, black on white crime, black on Asian crime, and the people who run this country, they all kind of look at it and pretend it's normal.
Right. Or they attribute the violence to, they blame the white folks.
I don't think a lot of listeners are really aware of this big sea change. Happened about a year ago. Because, you know, remember, I mean, all of us know all the excuses, right, for this kind of, this black pathology.
Sure.
It's poverty, it's education, it's motherlessness, it's fatherlessness, sisterlessness, whatever. But
sure.
About a year ago, a lot of people start taking that off the table. And it comes down to what you just said. It's all about white racism now.
Right. Now, you refer to a prison psychologist. Did he have a lot to say about that? And it happens...
What?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I cut you off again.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, if I were running your show right now, I would say, hang up on Colin Flaherty and get Marlon Newburn on this show as soon as you can. He's 30 years in the prison system. And he has no interest in sugarcoating anything. It's amazing his insights and his firsthand knowledge with this unbelievable level of black crime and violence. You really got to get him on your show.
Oh, I'd love to. Yes, but he had some great things to say in several areas of your book, several sections of your book, and I thought, wow, now he is really putting it right, right where it belongs, the blame right where it belongs. And do you think that Obama, with his attitude, as well as his wife's attitude, because they both promote this victim, the blacks are such victims, and Trayvon Martin could have been my son, and, you know, they show that a younger picture of Martin and think, oh, what a nice kid, and you call him Saint Martin, or Saint Trayvon, that's pretty funny. you're pretty funny in your book. I mean,
every time you say that, I feel like I want to hear that, you know, church music, you know, that Gregorian chant coming out every time I hear his name.
Yeah, you're really clever in your writing. I just really got a kick out of it. So now the Lance Corporal Marine that was in 29 Palms. You want to talk about that story? There's so many stories in your book.
I know, so many stories, and it's funny, you know, had you not said 29 Palms, I would have had to ask which one.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was, it wasn't even that big of a deal in the world scope of things. A guy was walking down the street, a corporal in the Marine Corps with a couple of his friends, came upon a bunch of black people. They beat him up really, really badly. And, you know, this is what this is what a lot of people call the knockout game. And this is what I call the knockout game, because my definition of the knockout game is when somebody beats the hell out of you just for the hell of it.
Yes.
And there's an enormous amount of that black on white going on. You know, I haven't read my own book for a while. I don't remember the details of how badly he was hurt, but I remember his father was quite outraged that nobody was paying attention to it. To them, it was just like shrugging their shoulders going, hey, you know, they were just blowing off some steam. What's the problem here?
Yeah. And one of the friends that he was with was black, which was very interesting.
And if memory serves, he did his best to help defend his friends, but he was definitely not the attention of the focus of the violence.
Exactly. Yeah. That was something else. Now you mentioned, in front of your book, the,
Oh, I'm sorry. You know what? I'm sorry to interrupt. Can we go back to this Obama thing?
Yeah.
When I started writing about this, I started hearing about that a little bit. Oh, Obama's responsible. I kind of brushed it off a little bit. Then Thomas Sowell started writing columns about my books. He wrote three of them. You know, I tell you what, that'll change your life right there.
Sure.
And so he started saying that. He even said we're in the midst of a civil race war. And I thought, well, I don't really believe that. Then I started thinking about it, not just the violence. But I'm thinking about all the stuff that exists at the top, you know, from Obama on down. I mean, the president is always talking about how black people are victims of white racism. So is his wife. I mean, if you go to the army, you go to the military academies, they are teaching white privilege there now.
Right.
And this is in government manuals. So we're not talking about crazy Black Panthers stopping somebody from voting in Philadelphia. We're talking about the federal government of the United States. We're talking about every department is really, really race conscious. I'm just pretty sure most people are not aware of how race conscious this crowd in Washington is. And it's all about race.
Yes.
You know, just last week, the Congressional Black Caucus, a couple weeks ago, I did a video on this. They did a big seminar on the big buzzword now is criminal justice reform, which of course means there are too many black people being arrested, convicted, sent to prison, and resent to prison once they get out. So people want to fix that. And so there you have a police chief of Indianapolis. You have the sheriff of Wayne County, which is Detroit. You got a professor from UCLA. You had the attorney, everybody black, and you had the attorney general of the United States, and you had a community activist, and they all agree this is all about racism now.
Right.
And I'm just astonished how race conscious they are and how, you know, all these unbelievable problems exist. And guess who's to blame? You are, Deanna.
You're right. Exactly.
Well, how'd that happen?
Yes. Exactly. How did that happen? Well, you mentioned Thomas Sowell. Alan B. West has also written a column, which you referred to, and he talks about your new book.
You know what? One of the fun things about writing a book is the people you meet. If it gets a little bit of, if people start reading it, they have Thomas Sowell, people like Thomas Sowell, Alan West, Sean Hannity. I mean, this is fantastic. I mean, it's kind of, it's kind of unbelievable, right? It's in a good way.
Sure. Well, yeah. Sean Hannity said, he referred to White Girl Bleed a lot, and he said that it has gone viral, and I think it really did. And Alan West said, at least author Colin Flaherty is tackling this issue of racial violence and black on white crime in his new book, and he too was referring to White Girl Bleed a lot. And of course,
he and the editor of his website reviewed Don't Make the Black Kids Angry, and he said,
exactly,
do two things: one, read it; two, give it to a liberal.
Yes. He said, let's see, what else? I'm scrolling through it right now. Yeah, he talks about Kansas City and Peoria and Des Moines and Minneapolis, Indianapolis, Green Bay, Greensboro, Jersey City, Dover, Monroe, Harrisburg.
Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cities, and everybody has the same problem as hyperviolence. Then we turn, but the crazy thing is now we turn on this last two nights ago, the president came out and said how much he supported Black Lives Matter because of this legacy of violence against black people that we have in this country.
Oh my gosh.
Hey, come on, people. Don't go crazy on me, because the fact is it's the other way around. It's the black on white violence that is wildly out of proportion. That's why I keep making all these videos. It's like, every video is kind of a challenge, right? And the book is a challenge. It's like, if white people are doing this, please, I beg of you, send me the links.
Exactly. Well, I understand that Michelle Obama was over in the UK not too long ago, maybe two or three months ago, talking to black students over there and doing the same thing in the UK as the Obamas are doing here. In other words, painting the African Americans as all victims. And so, I mean,
she gave a speech at Tuskegee, graduation speech, just a couple months ago, and I like to take these videos of episodes of large and really nasty videos of black mob violence and black on white crime. A lot of them they're security cameras, so they don't have audio. So I like to put the videos up, then I like to put down in the corner Michelle Obama kind of narrating the video, telling everybody how black people are such victims of white racism all the time. You know, they're not hiding, to their credit. I did it, Ben Carson has a magazine called Currency. So they asked me to write an article about grading the president on race relations.
Wow.
I gave him an A because the president is doing exactly what he said he was going to do.
Yes.
Nobody's hiding it.
Indeed. All righty, we have a 3-minute break. We will be right back with our guest.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest tonight is Colin Flaherty. He is the author of Don't Make the Black Kids Angry. I love that title. I just love that title. The hoax of black victimization and those who enable it. It is a must-read book. Must read this book. And also...
Well, let's tell the people where the title came from.
Yes, yes. Please tell us.
I'm going to quiz you. I'm going to see if you really read the book. I know you did.
I did. Cleaver.
Yeah, it's yeah. weird. So now, maybe I don't get out much, but does anybody, do you or anybody listening to this show know that Kansas City, Missouri, is a center of racial violence and denial? Well, it is. And there's an upscale shopping area in Kansas City called Country Club Plaza.
Yes.
For years, large groups of black people go there at night and they cause violence, mayhem. They attack cars, they attack shoppers, they fight. Lots of police, lots of pepper spray, the whole thing. Been going on for years. They can't stop it. So finally, they decided they were going to do a curfew. And the former mayor of Kansas City was back in Kansas City. He's now a congressman, but he was back in town just for whatever. And so they called up to him and they were talking about other things. And they said, oh, by the way, Mr. Mayor, what do you think of this curfew? And he goes, oh, I don't like that. All that's going to do is make a lot of black kids angry.
Indeed.
Wow.
Indeed. I lived in Kansas City, Missouri for a year. And
what'd you do there?
Well, I went there with my husband, and I am very familiar with Country Club Plaza.
What's it like?
And downtown.
It's pretty nice, right?
Oh, it was fabulous. It was absolutely fabulous. A wonderful area. I mean, it was upscale. Upscale area.
There was a Marine captain there. This is like a month or so ago. He's in a restaurant. He has an encounter with a bunch of black people where somebody does one of these, you know, they bump into him and they go, hey, why'd you bump into me? What a deal. Next thing you know, they're beating this guy to within an inch of his life. This is Country Club Plaza.
Wow. And it had the best shops, and there was I can't remember exactly the name of the community that it was next to. It's very, very rich community. Gosh, I wish I could remember. This was back in, oh, let's see, where, 87. About 87. 86, 87. No, 84. But it was great. Living in Kansas City, Missouri was great. And, like I said, I was only there for a year. But, I knew that there were a lot of, there were certain areas, that were populated by, African Americans. And, but that's very sad, that they would, take over this Country Club Plaza.
I don't get sad about it. I don't get happy about it. I just get determined that I'm going to look at this right in the eye and tell everybody what's going on there. I mean, it's astonishing what's happening at the Country Club Plaza in Kansas City. That's where you go for, you know, checkered tablecloths, picnics,
yes.
Lemonade.
Yes.
I mean, but that's the point is Des Moines, Iowa. All sorts of crazy stuff happens in Des Moines. Beat Whitey Night at the Iowa State Fair. How about, Cedar Rapids, Iowa? How about also, how about Lincoln, Nebraska? How about Omaha, Nebraska? Good. I mean, I'm just telling you, it's a lot of stuff going on in the heartland right now.
Yeah. And you mentioned that they did everything that they could in Kansas City. They replaced the mayor, they got a new police chief, they begged the parents, they pleaded with the perpetrators. Nothing worked. Nothing worked. And I just do not understand why these people, these authorities, these officials are catering to these gangs. And there's another statement in the book that you made that I thought was really interesting. You said flash robs instead of flash mobs, and I thought that was really clever because that's what they do.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
The Washington Post had a big story about that just a couple days ago. In Georgetown, of course, that's the upscale place of Washington, correct? All these nice shops, $1,000 handbags, the whole thing. And that's where all the diplomats and all the rich people live, and some students live there. It's also, and there's lots of video on this, lots of video of large groups of black people kind of flash robbing, rushing these stores, grabbing an armful of stuff and running out. Sometimes it's big groups, sometimes it's smaller groups. So the merchants got together with this kind of like little app for your iPhone, And so they could kind of notify each other when they saw these groups of black people coming in to do damage to their store or to their customers. And it was happening a lot. Of course, the Washington Post does a big story on this, saying this is the end of the world. This is racial profiling. How dare you do this? Because the only people you're identifying on your app are African-American people. Bad, bad, bad. You know, I just did a video on this, and in the video, I kind of reminded people what happened last year. A local TV station in Washington, D.C., they had a similar app. This app would identify the quote-unquote sketchy neighborhoods wherever you are. So the local TV crew gets a hold of the app, and they thought they were going to go out and like be real snarky about it and show how you could go to one of these neighborhoods and everybody was going to love all of God's creatures. So they take their van, their TV van, and they start walking around the neighborhood saying, hey, these crazy out-of-towners say this is a dangerous neighborhood. They go back to their van, and their van has been broken into, and they lost tens of thousands of dollars of equipment.
Oh, my gosh. What a way to learn the hard way, huh?
Washington, D.C. is a dangerous, dangerous place at certain places and at certain times. And the Washington Post is the leader and ignoring, denying, condoning, excusing it. You know, one of the things I don't do, and I kind of, would you mind if I broke one of my own rules here?
Sure, please. Go ahead.
So my big rule is I don't like doing causes. I don't like doing solutions. But let me just point out, people always say, well, why is this happening, Colin? Well, I don't know why it's happening, but I can tell you a couple things that are absolutely true. Black children are learning racial hostility in home, in TV, in the media, in church. They're learning it in school. There's a program called Courageous Conversations. It's also a book, which I've read and, you know, I wrote about, and Don't Make the Black Kids Angry. So it's by a guy named Dr. Glenn Singleton. So he takes his little dog and pony show to hundreds of school districts around the country, including entire states, California, Wisconsin, Massachusetts. And he has a courageous conversation with you, Diana, if you're one of the teachers. You know, the teacher, an archetypal teacher, is a young, white, liberal woman, just, you know, maybe a year or two or three out of college. So he gets him in a room, he looks at him, and he goes, we're going to have a courageous conversation. That means you have to be courageous enough to admit your racism is what is responsible for this enormous amount of racial disparity between white children and black children in schools, in performance, and in discipline. The Department of Education sends out teams of people and Department of Justice all over the country to school districts to check their records, check their discipline records, check their grade records. If there's any disparity, you better have a good explanation as to why you are practicing white racism. Teachers all around the country have gotten the message, if we discipline black children in school, we are putting our careers and jobs at risk. That's why by far, the most videos of black mob violence I have directed at teachers, kids, neighbors, staff members, is in black schools.
Wow. Yes, and that is what is happening. And like you say, they get it from everywhere, from entertainment.
They get it from everywhere. It's always everywhere. The same message. You are not responsible for your behavior. White racism is. And right. To give that message and then to turn around and at 9 o'clock, and then to turn around at 10 o'clock when your school is out of control. There was just a couple days ago, I did a video about a case of sexual assault in the Bronx in a school in a vacant classroom. And so the reporter, to her credit, took the story one step further. She quoted a state audit of that school. The auditors went in there and they found out of the 18 classrooms they visited, 9 of the classrooms in this black school were out of control. And that means the other 9 were just slightly less out of control. This is like happening all over the country. The black schools are in mayhem. They're in chaos. And we cannot ignore how we're teaching kids. They're not responsible. I tell you, and when you look at Black History Month in these schools, It's one big victim fest all month long.
Wow.
Well, this is a real happy amazing. Topic, isn't it? I mean, some people really resist hearing this, but if you have parents, older parents that live in near a black neighborhood, they're targets. If you have children or nieces or nephews that go to a magnet school or a charter school, they're targets.
Sure.
I get so many videos from all over the country all the time. So we went on a 3-minute break, right?
Right.
So I went to my email on my little iPhone here. I looked at on my Facebook message, and I get a video from Atlanta. There's a video of a group of black people that this is on video. You know, the people are on video from DeKalb County, and it's a gas station. They approach a white woman in at the gas pump and say, "Hey, you know, give us your stuff." She said, "No, they killed her."
Oh my gosh.
That's in the news right now in Atlanta.
I bet we don't hear a word about it. We're not going to hear a word about it. The other thing in your book that you mention frequently is, and this has been, you make the statement, and this has been happening for a long time.
You know, whenever I do one of these stories, especially when I write for American Thinker or Breitbart or Daily Caller or Front Page Magazine or WND, you see this horrific episode of black mob violence at a fair, county fair or state fair or maybe a bus station or a metro. There's almost always somebody at the end of the story, little old person comes up and goes, "Yeah, this has been happening here for a long time."
Right. And if the media does do any reporting on it, they make it like it's an isolated incident, or it wasn't really that bad, or it was just some people, kicking up their heels or something like that. They don't mention the injuries and the deaths that are caused.
Okay, now you're reading my mind, or you're either reading my mind or you're hacking my computer.
I'm reading your mind.
I'm going to have to insist that you come clean. Because just this morning, I got a video from Tennessee State University in Nashville. This happened yesterday. 4 people on the campus of Tennessee State University were shot. 1 was killed. Tennessee State University is a black college. Everybody involved was black. So they have the white cop from Nashville, the police department. He's on the thing. And he said this 3 times in a 3-minute period. He was telling everybody how isolated this stuff was. To the station's credit, they kind of rolled down the story, and at the end they go, this happened last week where 3 people were shot at a party at a campus party just a few blocks away. And then it said over the last year or two, they've had dozens of examples of violence, burglary, assault on the campus, and students there are going crazy. They're saying our campus is not safe, yet we get the cops out there trying to pretend that it is. So on black colleges there's a lot of violence on the campus and around, but if you're in a campus like the University of Minneapolis, University of Minnesota, how about the University of Chicago, if you're in one of these campuses, you're kind of an island and surrounded by all these black neighborhoods.
Yes.
The people in the black neighborhoods, they're not making any secret about how they feel about the college and the students. They resent them. They have meetings about gentrification where they say how bad it is there's so many white people here. Just a month ago in Harlem, they were having a big meeting in an auditorium. 5 people on a stage, a city councilman, couple of professors, couple of community activists. The city councilman says, I'm going to tell you the worst thing that ever happened to me in my neighborhood, and it happened recently. I saw a young white couple pushing a stroller. So we have this enormous, and then somebody else said, yeah, I saw a white guy jogging through my neighborhood the other day. And so you have all these colleges, everybody at Temple University, you have these meetings where they identify white people as being nothing but conveyors of racism, nothing but trouble. Then they turn around and wonder why there's so much violence on and around the campus. Temple University is going through that right now.
Right. One story in your book is about the bus driver who had a mob of 20 black people, and they assaulted a white family of three. You want to talk about that?
Oh, man. You know what? Isn't that the craziest story you've ever heard in your
Unbelievable.
Entire life?
But it shows that the older generation is also involved. I mean, this bus driver obviously was of the older generation.
And again, like, if I didn't see this on video, and if I didn't, you know, see that she was actually arrested, if I didn't follow up and see the police reports, I would say the story I'm about to tell you is unbelievable. So a young white couple in Baltimore. Now, Baltimore is a chocolate city where white people are targets of violence. I write about that a lot. So it's so bad that this young couple took the bus every day to pick their child up from school, like a nine-year-old kid, so they could escort him home on the bus. Mm-hmm. So they're on a crowded bus, and everybody's black except for this young couple and their kid, including the bus driver's black. The bus driver says, move to the back. And they go, there's no room. It's too crowded. They get into a big shouting match. The bus driver picks up a telephone, calls ahead to a black school a few stops down the road, and says, these white people are giving me trouble. I want you to come up here and take care of it. Next few stops later, a bunch of black people get on the bus. They wait for the three white people, the couple and their kid, to get off the bus. They all got off with them, and they beat the stuffing out of these three people. There's a nine-year-old kid on TV, on the video, describing what it's like to try to pull all these black people off of his mom who were beating up his mom. That's incredible. And it took two months. It took a month before the police even came to investigate their criminal complaint.
Exactly. All righty. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Back. This is Deanna. Our guest tonight is Colin Flaherty. He is a wonderful, wonderful writer. You need to buy his book. Don't Make the Black Kids Angry, The Hoax of Black Victimization and Those Who Enable It. You also need to subscribe to his website. Just visit whitegirlbleedalot.com and subscribe, and you will receive a confirmation and messages from him. And you need to also visit the YouTube page, and I will post that in the chat room. And, of course, it is also posted on the schedule page. Tell us what the bus driver did. What she actually watched this. I asked you to tell it, and then I go ahead.
I want you to go ahead.
She organized the thing, and then the black passengers were just encouraging the assault. And the bus driver waited until the beating was finished so that the attackers could get back on the bus.
It doesn't get any worse than that.
No.
You know, Baltimore, somebody wrote a story last year called Baltimore, You're Breaking My Heart. And she was one of these kind of gentrification types. They move near a black neighborhood. They fix up the old house.
Sure.
And in their mind, you know, they have nothing but love for all of God's creatures, and they don't understand how anybody could have any hostility directed at them. So this woman, after being in her house for a year or two, she wrote this story saying, My life is one constant threat of violence. I have to borrow my neighbor's pit bull to walk around the corner. Her name's Tracy Halverson. And she didn't even point the finger and say, listen, this is a black and white thing. The crime in Baltimore is a black thing, a violent crime. And so she wrote it, and the thing got a lot of attention. And she was even one of these people that put her hands up and said, hey, I'm not talking about black criminals. I'm talking about criminals who just happen to be black. Race has nothing to do with this. Okay, that's what she said. And the day after her article came out, the black academics and the black writers of Baltimore lashed out at her. They said, no, Tracy, race has everything to do with it. Racism has everything to do with it. Your racism, your white privilege that leads you to believe that somehow you are entitled to be safe in Baltimore when nobody in Baltimore should have that expectation. They just lashed her for this. And it's everybody's always turning it. They're turning the victims. They turn the predators into the victims, right?
Right.
They're victims of white racism. And the people who are victimized, they turn them into the bad people. It's, yeah. This is happening all over the country.
Yeah. And of course, we all know we're going to the top of the hour break just momentarily. And we will take calls after we come back. But the other thing I want you to talk about is Ferguson, of course, and Michael Brown. And, you know, another statement that you make in your book repeatedly is, for no reason whatsoever. And that is, you mentioned that in this chapter, The Other Side of Ferguson. So, we are taking a 3-minute break. We'll be right back and we'll take your calls.
Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back. Excuse me. Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest tonight is Colin Flaherty. He is an award-winning journalist and the author of the new book, Don't Make the Black Kids Angry, The Hoax of Black Victimization and Those Who Enable It, came out in March of this year. He also wrote White Girl Bleed a Lot, came out in September of 2013. It is a number one best-selling book. And he also wrote Knockout Game, A Lie. All three books are about black mob violence, black on white crime, and, well, the knockout game. His YouTube channel is, I posted that in my chat room, whitegirlbleedalot.com. Please subscribe to that website for messages from Colin. Alrighty, we will take calls at 800-313-9443. And, let's talk about Trayvon Martin. Just a little bit. We do have a caller, but why don't we go ahead and take the call, and then let's talk about...
Sounds good.
St. Trayvon, as you call him. Okay. Charles,
I'm going to start singing. You mentioned his name one more time. I'm just going to start singing Gregorian chants.
Okay. Charles in Florida, welcome.
Hi. How you doing, Deanna? And to your guest, too, the author of the book, Don't Make the Black Kids Angry, right? Is that the name of the book?
Yes.
I wanted to talk about the way things are in France now. A friend of mine, he's a retired physics professor, and he could speak French. He spent 2 years over there learning on his own, you know, total immersion, and he goes over there once in a while. And we had, you know, they never tell you in the newspaper, but there are millions of Arabs and blacks that live in Paris and dominate it. And it's very dangerous, especially if you come into De Gaulle Airport in northern Paris. These two ethnic groups hate each other and go at each other even in downtown Paris with machetes. They never tell you any of this in the newspaper, how dangerous it is. This is these one world globalists and you know, that are want to have a.
Charles, anyway, go ahead. Yeah. Did you have a question about the things that are going on in this country?
Well, yeah, but I wanted to show that how in France, the people, the whites over there, you know, all these trendies and you know, they just stand around and let their cell phones be taken away from them.
Wow.
And don't do anything. They'll just stand there, these goths and different counterculture types, and just sit there, and these Arabs and blacks will just come up to them and slap them in the face. And they do nothing. The white race has got to grow up some cojones, realize that, you know, that's the problem in this country. The, you know, these gentrify yuppies that think they can gentrify blacks, black areas have got another thing coming. They realize they've got a tiger by the tail. That's my view. Did you know that Sarkozy, when he was elected that night, when he was elected to office, he's one of the tribe, of course. A friend of mine got to sit at the table with him. He was a member of National Front, and Sarkozy let him sit there with he and his wife. They closed down all the subway entrances so the blacks and Arabs couldn't get out, you know, get out of their slums and bother the yuppies who were partying, you know, because Sarkozy was going to have big tax breaks for all these upscale people. So that's the, you know, it's not only a class, it's a class thing, it's a race thing. And, whites have got to learn that in this country, what's happening in France or Europe. You know, they're just going to push you around if you don't do anything.
Your thoughts, Colin?
I live in a fantasy world. Go ahead.
A couple of things, Deanne, to our callers. One, I reject any race consciousness whatsoever. So when people say, white's got to do this, white's got to do that, I think racial consciousness is the problem, not the solution. But I get emails from France, I get England, South Africa. Oh my God. What's happening in South Africa is a crime of global proportions. I did a story in Don't Make the Black Kids Angry about a club owner in London. He said, he posted it on his Facebook page, and he said, I said, I own this club, and to say club does not mean a tiny little place where you go in and have a few beers. It means one of these like three-story places with shiny floors, flashing lights, $300 bottles of vodka, that kind of place. He said, 16 clubs in London have shut down in the last 18 months because of black mob violence in their clubs, and nobody wants to talk about it. So there's something really wrong in this country, something wrong in England, France, South Africa, something really wrong in Sweden. And the reaction is always the same. Let's pretend it's not happening.
Well, that's because, you know, you have these race-mixing social democrats like in Norway and Sweden. They just think that everybody that's got two legs and stands on two legs is the same. They invite Muslims into, like, Malmo, Sweden is the rape capital of Europe now. I keep telling people, you know, but they just keep living in la la land, and they won't face facts. They just bring more of them in, like, what's her name of Germany, the prime minister, what's her name?
Merkel. You know, one of the things I experienced here is the level of resistance to anybody wanting to acknowledge there's something really, really wrong happening here. So that's why I don't do causes or solutions, because, I mean, what sense does it make to talk about the cause of a problem that many people still refuse to acknowledge even exists? That's why on my YouTube channel, I get all these videos and I just put them on there one after another going,
sure.
Did you see this? Did you see this?
Yeah.
And at some point, with so much video out there, we're just not going to be able to sustain this level of deniability where it is now. And I see chinks in it, in the armor now. I see a lot of people aware there's something really wrong happening. I see a lot of people speaking the truth, demanding the truth. And one of the reasons that this conversation gets so marginalized is when people do start generalizing and stereotyping and start talking about the white race has to do this, white race has to do that. I'm not about that. I'm not part of that in any, you know, maybe I'm just not about that. I just think that is the problem. That's not the solution.
Right. Well, people like socialists or social democrats in Europe, they want the more the merrier. They'll bring in tons of
Charles,
Muslims or blacks.
Yeah, I really agree with Colin. People have to look at these videos, have to see what's happening, to know, and so that they can understand. And anyway, thank you so much for your phone call. I really appreciate it, your comments. Let's take Malcolm in Chicago. Malcolm?
Hello, how you guys doing?
Good.
All right, yeah. Thank you for taking my call. I've been listening to your show, good subject. I'm an Afro-American man, and there's two things I want to point out. I want to point out the problem with the black population in America. I'm talking about blacks here in America. And I'm going to point out the solution to the black problem in America. First of all, I want you to know I don't condone any violence or misconduct on the part of any black person to any color in this country, white or Chinese, whatever. If you rob somebody or deliberately committing wrong, you're wrong. That's just it. But the problem is this with our population in America. We have a long history of being beat down by the judicial system in this country. And that could be contributed to many things. One of them is that whites have always dominated in numbers as judges and prosecution in the judicial system. Another thing could be education. I think
Collins kind of covered that. He talked about education.
We call what Malcolm just said a fairy tale. That's an excuse, Malcolm. Listen, there's thousands of excuses. I don't think anybody on this planet is more familiar with excuses than I have. So if you think you can come up with some new ones, hey, I'd love to hear a new one.
No, I'm not me. I'm one of the ones that don't make excuses. Now, this is
You just made two of them.
I've been trying to talk to blacks as much as I can. I don't like the Black Lives Matter movement. I'm not with that. Blacks have to take responsibility on the highest level. Now, I mean by that, we have to have our own conduct judged by our own people. And it's no racism involved with this. Blacks have never took responsibility of their own conduct. They need their conduct in the courtroom to be solved by black judges, and black prosecutors need to deal with black problems and quit asking other people to read our problem or help our solution. This is where these protesters come from. They want to try to hold whites up, you know, handcuff them or make them feel guilty and say, well, look, you know, treat us this way. Do this for us. Do this for us. No. Stop asking whites to do anything, and we start dealing with our own problems. I'm talking about in the court, judicial. It don't have to be no separation of government at all. But we can have it where we need to be responsible for our own conduct by running our own judicial and dealing with our problems.
Colin, what do you think?
Well, Deanna, I mean, really? Are we really going to separate the races and give each other separate systems? Why don't we all join the human race? One race.
Yes.
Why don't we all stop? Why don't we all stop making up these divisions called race and start and stop making up these fairy tales and excuses for this unbelievable level of crime and violence? That's what's happening. Malcolm, I'm sorry to say this. That's what you're doing.
Don't you see the judicial system that there's a lot of blacks locked up? Or in the criminal system, period. Don't you see that?
Yeah, why are they locked up?
It's already proportionate of blacks in the judicial system.
Why are they, okay, let me ask you this. Are there black people in prison for no reason whatsoever?
Some of them are.
Let's get them out. That's not a political problem. That's a legal problem. You know, when I was spending more time as a reporter, I was featured on Court TV, LA Times, NPR. I did a story that did get a black guy out of prison. I showed this black man was unjustly convicted of trying to kill his white girlfriend. It was a very big deal. I thought it was going to be a movie for a while. That's a legal thing. But guess what? there aren't, as bad as the disparity is between white and black people in crime, the real numbers are even worse. In Baltimore, they talk about Bronx juries, how a black jury tends not to convict a black defendant. We talk about stitches for snitches. We talk about witness intimidation, which the Philadelphia District Attorney says is at epidemic levels. So black people actually have an unfair advantage as defendants in the criminal justice system. And so people talk about this disparity. That's a fairy tale, Malcolm. Why don't we stick to some facts?
Such as O.J. Simpson. He got off because of the jury. They thought he was a wonderful guy. But it was obvious that he actually did commit the crimes. Okay. Thank you, Malcolm, for your phone call.
You know, Deanna, that's where we are, what you just said. You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's where we are right now. That's how bad it is. That's...
Yes. Exactly. They didn't look at the evidence. They just looked at who he was. And anyway, let's go on to Steve in California. Steve?
Yeah, hi, Deanna. Great show today. Hey, I just have to say Malcolm kind of contradicted himself when he talks about all lives matter, but then he says black people, black people, black people. He is making an argument just for black people and not everybody in general, and he is making an excuse. He's making an excuse of why things are the way they are and why black crime is so bad. There's no excuse. There was a lot of poverty in the 1920s with the stock market crash. We did not see the crime that we have today, and those people had it much harder than we did. So that's a bad excuse to use to say, you know, because we were oppressed and we were discriminated against and we were picked on back at a certain time, to now say our behavior is indicating that it was okay. This is why it's happening. That's a bad excuse to use. Bad excuse.
I'm with you, buddy.
Indeed. Okay. Thank you. Let's take Dave in Nevada. Dave?
Hi, Deanna. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to respond also to the last person or the last couple of the person before the last. I don't think even if we had all black judges, the black situation would get any better. In fact, it might even get worse because they might have to bend over backwards just to make themselves look like they're acting on the side of justice.
Hey, do you mind if I tell a quick story? You mind if I interrupt your call for a second to tell a quick story? This happened like just 2 months ago. There was a family, a young white family. It might have been Indianapolis. I think it was. And they were victims of a really nasty case of home invasion. A bunch of black people came in, beat them, threatened them, pulled guns, and the whole thing. They caught them. So they go to, the guys are convicted. They're in the sentencing. And the lawyer stands up and says, Your Honor, the people who were victims of this crime, their child is now afraid of black people because of that crime. The judge, the black judge, went off on the family. He started saying all these bad things about the family, accusing them of this, accusing them of that. And basically, he just gave the guys a slap on the wrist and, you know, begged them not to do it again. So this whole race consciousness thing, you know, we were talking about this book, Courageous Conversations. This guy, Glenn Singleton, he writes about that at length. He says black people talk about race every day, all the time. Mm-hmm. He said, but white people are, quote, trained not to do that. This racial consciousness, it's like way outlived its usefulness now. The idea that we would start having black people go to black judges, I mean, come on, man. It's crazy.
Right.
I'm sorry. We can now resume the regularly scheduled portion of that guy's phone call. Sorry.
Okay, Dave, did you have something
fine.
Else? Okay.
Yeah, if the other caller really wants, you know, like a really clear example of if things get better if you put black people in places of power, well, there's a guy named Barack Hussein Obama who's the president. I don't think the black conditions gotten any better, if at all.
Here's what's important for people to know. Malcolm is squarely in the mainstream of a lot of black people in this country, and you can look at the black websites, you'll see it. And I just don't see how this ends well.
Yeah, it doesn't work the way he's talking about it. And I actually heard Pastor David Manning, who's on RBN, he's on Late at Night, and he made a really very cogent comment, and he said that, well, Jews are they're protected because of the Holocaust. And then he said, well, blacks are also protected because of slavery. And that was kind of a striking statement, but in a way it's true. It's the blacks in this country are kind of, in a way, they're shielded because they have they use the past, and so it's kind of
you know, you say in a way, you say in a way they're protected. If you go to city websites where they're talking about recruiting cops, it's not in a way. They're very explicit about identifying who are members, and they use these expressions, who are members of protected minorities. Very explicit, who they're protected, they're shielded. And I don't know, maybe I don't get out enough. I'm always astonished when I see that stuff.
Right. And I don't know if race, the experiment of having mixed races or culture is proving to be success or failure, but I don't know if it's something that's possible in the long term, because if you look at Europe back in the centuries when they had this problem, like in Spain for instance, they basically enacted blood purity laws, so they went the opposite direction because the situation got so bad. And so I don't know, because we're a free country, I don't think we're ever gonna go to that extreme, but that's how they dealt with it back in the day. So we have we're in a situation where we're a democracy, a modern democracy, which is, in a way, it's built on being politically correct to a certain extent. So we allow for a certain amount of cultural freedom, but I think that notion breaks down in the long run. So anyways, I'll just leave it
only,
with that.
Okay, it only breaks down to the extent we let it break down. And maybe I'm the last person on, and maybe Deanna, maybe I have a hunch Deanna's with me on this. Maybe Deanna and I are the last people in America who believe in one race, the human race, who believe this mixing, who believe this melting pot is a real thing that we have experienced personally. And it's a fantastic thing. I don't know why people are so eager to take it apart. And that's what we're seeing now. You know what's happening, Deanna? We're losing our country over it.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely. It's that divide and conquer kind of thing, and nobody's going to win. Absolutely, no one is going to win. And I mean, I have friends who are black. One of my favorite doctors is Dr. Jennifer Daniels, and her family was poor. She lived in the ghetto, and she didn't blame anybody for her circumstances. She went to Harvard. She decided what she was going to do with her life, and she did it. She didn't blame anybody for her circumstances. And that's what you have to do.
I don't, you know, this whole group think thing, this whole group consciousness of any kind.
Consensus.
Like, I don't do the Irish thing on St. Patrick's Day. I don't do the German thing. I just do, I'm a person, I'm an American, I'm an individual. I try to take you as I find you. I want you to take me as you find me. And I don't know, Deanna, am I being too idealistic here?
No, I think that you're presenting some information. You're making people aware of what is going on, probably better than any other person in the country. And you are revealing what is going on, where the mainstream media is covering this stuff up, which is a crime. It's an egregious crime to cover these criminal acts up.
You know, when I first started writing about this, I thought I was just going to do really, it's kind of a, I thought it was more of a media book, right? I'm just going to do, show how the huge difference between what the newspaper said was happening and then using YouTube show what really happened.
Sure.
But then as I started going down the road, I started getting these letters from people. I get so much mail, and they're saying, Colin, you are saving lives. You're opening people's eyes as to what is really happening. You know, I had to move my parents out of this neighborhood. I made a different decision for my kids in that school. And this so it's really exists on a couple levels, right? One, on a personal safety level,
right,
that we really, so a lot of people get my book and they give it to somebody and they say, man, if you're going to move over there, you better read this book. If you're going to let your parents live there, you better read this, because they are targets.
Exactly. Absolutely, they are. And let's talk about the Ferguson thing and the riots after what's his name?
St. Michael Brown Ferguson.
Yeah.
I told you.
Talk about Michael Brown.
Okay,
he was in the midst of committing a robbery. How tall was he? 6'2"? Wait, 290 pounds?
He was a big guy.
6'4". Yeah, 18-year-old, 6'4", 290 pounds. And they say that he was shot in the back. What a big lie.
So I wrote an article within 10 days of Ferguson documenting all the stuff we knew that was a lie. You know, shot hands up, a lie, don't shoot, a lie, shot in the back, a lie, gentle giant, a lie, on and on and on, okay? Lies. But when I think of Ferguson, I think of two things. I think of how long those lies persisted. I'm thinking of something that happened just a few months ago. 100 black staffers in Washington, D.C., congressional staffers, were on the steps of Capitol Hill, steps of the Capitol, doing a hands up, don't shoot group picture. That's a lie.
Can you believe that?
And the enormous amount of, you know, deceit we saw on TV. But I think of one other thing too. I don't hear about this one a lot. During Ferguson, I was one of these geeks. I was actually listening to the police monitors, you know, and I recorded it all. I made a little, actually put this on one of my podcasts. The police were begging for help. They were going, hey, I got a group there. Should we go down there? Where's the National Guard? Where's my backup? Same thing happened in Baltimore. 100 cops during the Baltimore riots were hospitalized with injuries. If you listen to the 911 calls that I posted, you can hear the cops going, hey, I'm being surrounded. They're throwing rocks and bottles at me. One just hit me in the face. My face is cut open. You have these people of responsibility who abandon our police officers. Deanne, try to think of the enormity of how bad that is. These cops are out there protecting us, and we expose them to this danger on purpose.
Indeed, because people refuse to, or the media refuses to talk about the truth about what's going on.
And but I'm also thinking of the mayor, and I'm thinking of the Baltimore and the governor of Missouri, who just absolutely put these people into harm's way, knowing that they were going to be harmed and they weren't going to back them up. I don't understand how people sleep at night doing that kind of stuff.
They just abandoned them. Absolutely abandoned them. All righty, we do have another caller. Let's take Francis in North Carolina.
Hey, folks.
Hi.
Apparently you, between the two of you, had made a comment that I thought was rather interesting and decided that I need to make a clarification on. And as far as the terminology of race is concerned, you mentioned human beings. Well, I tend to look at human beings as being a species, whereas the aspect of race is being that of ethnicity, which is multi-different types of ethnic races, such as Asian, European, African, Native American, ad nauseum, and so forth and so on. And I'm just curious as to what your thoughts is about that.
You know, Deanna, when I get a question like that, I'm reminded that I'm just a guy standing on the street corner looking at a car crash, saying, there's a car crash. I'm surrounded by 20 people insisting there is no car crash. So I'm not a biologist. I'm not a geneticist. I'm not a theologian, a philosopher, a sociologist, psychologist. Just a guy sitting here saying something really bad is happening. So I don't know anything about genetics. The only thing I know about genetics, when I took it in college, there were 25 girls in the class and I was the only guy. So I kind of, even that didn't help me. But anyway, it's a different story.
All righty.
I mean, let me ask the caller a question. Do you have training in this area?
I would clarify your question.
Well, it's a pretty simple question, and training does not mean going down to the library and reading a magazine on biology. No, I mean, the people who study genetics, I mean, there's a lot going on out there, and I don't think any of them are, I don't know what they're saying. I don't even care what they're saying. I know that in this country we can make it work if we just get rid of a lot of this racial consciousness that is ruining our country now.
Well, I would have to agree with you on that sentiment. The question is that the individual person themselves has to be willing to make a conscious decision to do that.
I'm with
but
you.
When they're under a conscious conditioning situation, then that's not going to happen.
All righty. Okay, we are going to a break, folks. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Stay tuned.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Welcome back. Time is going by so quickly. My guest tonight is Colin Flaherty, and he is the author of Don't Make the Black Kids Angry, The Hoax of Black Victimization and Those Who Enable It. Came out in March of this year, and he has a YouTube channel, which I will again post in the chat room. And if you visit whitegirlbleedalot.com, you may subscribe to that website and receive messages. And please, please do look at his YouTube channel. And if you purchase the book, which I hope that you will do, Don't Make the Black Kids Angry, there are so many links in that book to external websites and to external sources. They're fabulous. Could we talk about what happened after the post Trayvon Martin situation? And we didn't hear about, we really didn't hear about a lot of the consequences of the trial.
You know, there were some really good books written about Trayvon. One was written by my friend Jack Cashiel, and he really talked about how, you know, who the real Trayvon was, how he wasn't this innocent kid. He talked about, you know, what Trayvon was doing that night. He talked about Trayvon's life up to that, how he was a thug, how he had been caught with stolen property and burglary tools. But because now in schools, the big buzzword is we don't want to put people on the cradle to prison pipeline, they just said, hey, let him go, and said, please don't do it again. So this was a person who learned early on that he was not responsible for his own actions, gets into some kind of violent encounter with the wrong person. And I don't have any empathy, not one ounce, for the people who are creating the violence. All my empathy is for the victims.
Indeed. And I think it's well placed. And George Zimmerman's acquittal in the slaying, I mean, that was a jury decided that. But apparently there was a lot of retaliation for that.
A lot of retaliation. I mean, this was a political prosecution. I mean, the state attorney general said so. And
yes,
that case, you know, people at that case, they looked at the case at court. Lawyers were saying, what is this case doing in court?
Exactly. Yeah.
So just kind of another example of how, you know, the psychiatrist, Deanne, they tell us we're only as sick as our secrets, and we're very secretive about race in this country and racial violence. I think that's why so many people are so sick in the head about it. It's why so many people, they talk about these, you know, racial separatism or racial superiority. And it's all cuckoo stuff. And I really believe the secrecy kind of feeds into that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If it's out in the open, then certainly we could be addressing it. Tell us about the knockout game, particularly on bikes, and this happens in Portland quite a bit.
Okay, so Portland, the knockout game is somebody beating the hell out of you just for the hell of it. Now, if you go to Portland and you read all the websites, everybody in Portland is very proud of the diversity, how well all the races get along. That's a myth. It's a hoax. It's a fairy tale. I mean, there are bike trails in Portland where black people attack white bikers. There's one guy in particular. You know, he was riding along Martin Luther King Boulevard. He was attacked by a bunch of black people, hurt him really badly. And the TV station thought it was doing a good thing by kind of glossing over the crime, but raising money for this, to buy this kid some medical attention. Well, that they're enabling that kind of really, really nasty behavior. And there was one bicyclist group, and this was happening all over Portland for years. The yuppie white bicyclists were being brutalized by groups of black people. And so the head of the biker club does a blog entry saying, well, you know, maybe it's because we're not as diverse as we should be. I mean, this is suicidal, Deanne.
It is, absolutely. And I mean, they attack kids. They attack children on their bikes. It is just amazing to me.
I have whole chapters on black mob violence and black on white crime on hiking and biking trails around the country. The big buzzword is you take these old abandoned rail right of ways, right? Well, they're abandoned because they go to factories that are in ghettos that nobody can run a factory in a ghetto anymore. So they have these like really long, nice biking trails, but they almost inevitably go through a black neighborhood, a high crime neighborhood. And once the bikers start going through there, I mean, I just documented this like several cases in Philly just a couple days ago. Once you start going through these that one little stretch of the trail, you are at an enormous amount of risk. The people who run the bike clubs don't acknowledge it. The local papers don't acknowledge it. I'm telling you, that's the way it is all over the country. So if you decide you want to be on your bike and do your bike thing on the rails to trails, you better be
good luck.
Yeah, good luck.
Right. Now, you received a letter from a Baltimore cop, and so could you tell us about that?
Well, I love that letter, and it's just an old cop. Well, he's about my age, so he's an old dude, but he retired, and he talked about what it was like growing up in Baltimore, how he and his friends were constantly aware of this threat of racial violence on him, and how he experienced that as a cop, both on the job and kind of inside the department. And he experiences it now as a retired person. And he insisted, like a lot of people write me letters and I repost them, but I usually strip their name out. But he insisted I put his name on it, because he wants to tell the truth, and because he's convinced as a cop, people just don't know how bad this racial violence is.
Indeed. And he said in his letter that he couldn't put the book down. And he's talking about your book, White Girl Bleed a Lot. And he ordered it from Amazon, and he got home from work at 2:15 p.m., and he started reading it. And he finished it. He didn't put it down until he finished it. And he told his wife that she and their 26-year-old son have to read it. And that's the way I feel about your current book, your recently released book.
I get a lot of email from Chicago cops, too. And they're always cops, whether Chicago, Brooklyn, Cincinnati, Cleveland, wherever, Houston. They're always telling me the same thing. Colin, this is what we would write if we could. So the book is not statistics. It's not dry. It's like, hey,
stories. This
is happening right now to real people. And a lot of people are ignoring it. Those are the, you know what? Those are the dangerous ones.
Right.
The reporter or the mayor who stands up and says, oh, no, this is no problem. You know, Colin's making this all up.
Wow. Well, you know, the city of Chicago actually has some very strict gun regulations. And yet there's shootings every weekend. I mean, sometimes there's as many as 37 dead in a weekend. And I mean, I can't believe that Obama, who was a community organizer in the Chicago area, is not totally aware of the situation, that he does not know the truth, and that he is promoting this division.
He knows the truth. The truth to him is that this is all happening because of a legacy of racism. I mean, that's his favorite buzzword. And so he gives black people in Chicago and other places license to commit these horrific crimes, and they can just sit back and shrug their shoulders and go, hey, it's not my fault. I mean, this is a day-to-day fact now. You know, when you look at Chicago, what a beautiful city that is. That might be the most beautiful city in America. It's being ruined. Right now, it's being ruined by this enormous amount of racial hostility and violence. And I hope people in Chicago figure it out before it's too late.
Exactly. And as you said, it is part of what they learn in school.
I wrote a story about a month ago. I got a call from a Chicago cop. He said, Colin, this is about 6 weeks ago. He goes, Colin, at our meeting this morning, our sergeant told us we're going to start depolicing several neighborhoods. I said, what did you just say? He said, depolicing. That's the scariest word I've ever heard in my life. There are neighborhoods, not just in Chicago, but in cities all over the country now, there are neighborhoods where cops will not go. I mean, this is the United States of America. We're losing it.
Right. I remember I was in the textile business, and I used to call on all the downtown Chicago people who were designers and that kind of thing. And I also had a customer. I met her at a trade show that she had a fabric shop in South Chicago. And I actually, and this has been, let's see, it's probably 89, 90, 92, somewhere around there. And she had bars on the door. You had to knock on the door in order to get let in because she kept the door locked. And this was a retail store, okay, but you had to knock on the door. I had to get there early, early in the morning because she said, now you've got to come early in the morning. And I was driving a van at the time, and she says, please cover all your windows. After I did this, I thought, what the heck am I doing? You know, this is dangerous. But anyway, she said, well, the gangbangers don't get up until about noon, so you'll be safe if you get here really early. Well, I only did this like twice, and then I thought, you know, her business is simply not worth the danger that it is to me to go into this area. And this was in the 90s. But, I mean, I think that that's the way it is.
I used to think what she thought, and this is the only reason I interrupted you, because this is like a life and death thing. I used to think that you could go anywhere, like up until noon and everybody woke up, until I started seeing all these videos of black people preying on people at bus stops at like 4 a.m., 5 a.m., 6 a.m., preying on joggers. And people listening to this, please don't think you get a pass because everybody's in bed. They're not.
Well, I'm glad that I quit going there. I just felt that the business that I got was just not sufficient to jeopardize my safety. So, anyway,
there's a great story out of Chicago, and which really kind of like sums the whole thing up. A white girl was arrested at the airport for acting crazy. They stuck her in a jail in South Chicago, the ghetto of Chicago, neighborhood of Chicago. They let her out 24 hours later. She was wearing, with nothing but a halter top and a pair of short shorts. No phone, no money. A couple hours later, she was pushed out of a 7-story window by a bunch of black people. Permanently, she lived. Permanent brain and physical damage. Her parents sued. The lawyer brought in a sociologist from Harvard. He talked about RAT, RAT, Routine Activity Theory. He said a white person in a black neighborhood can routinely expect to be the victim of violence. The judge cited that when he awarded the family $22.5 million. He said, she would have been safer had you taken her to the zoo and put her in a cage full of lions rather than let her out of that jail the way you did.
Exactly. Talk to us about Black History Month. I mean, we don't have White History Month. I don't know. It's kind of.
I just did a podcast with a kid. I call anybody under 40 a kid. I did a podcast with a kid from Massachusetts who grew up in a poor neighborhood, a white kid, and he went to a school, was probably 50-50. He said the most dangerous month of the year for him was Black History Month, because even more than usual, the black and white teachers would talk about this relentless white racism that's caused so much problem for so many black people. He said the violence directed at white people in their schools during that month was catastrophic and enormous.
Wow. And of course, teachers. Teachers are also, they are victimized. They certainly don't have any respect from certain students. And I would hate to be a teacher in Chicago. And I know people who are teachers in Chicago, and it's a treacherous kind of a situation.
Every year, thousands of teachers are assaulted by black students in black schools. The unions are starting to speak out about it a little bit. In places like St. Louis, 50% of the teachers quit on the first day. These are these, wide-eyed little, white liberal girls, right? They're going to save the world. They go into these classrooms and they see this enormous amount of violence and abuse, and they say, I'm getting out of here. And the teachers, the violence being directed at teachers, more and more teachers are speaking out. Union officials are speaking out all over the country. But it's amazing how many teachers think that's just kind of a normal thing. Boy, I have so many videos on my website, on my YouTube channel of black violence in classrooms, which is now normal.
Right. You also talk about, the cops are quitting. Cops are quitting because of the mob violence.
Cops and teachers, and let's put bus drivers in this group too.
Mm-hmm.
These are three groups of people who are subject to daily racial harassment, taunting, and violence, often on video. And when you meet a cop or talk to a cop or a bus driver or a teacher that's been in that environment, you're looking at somebody with PTSD.
Yes, yes.
But to say it, for them to say it, is to like put their PTSD on steroids, because not only do they have PTSD, now they're PTSD that is shunned by the people who run their organizations. It's unbelievable the abuse they receive.
Right.
I get so much email from bus drivers. Oh, man.
Asian mob violence. The Asians seem to be the targeted group of people that the blacks go after. And this was in Iowa, of all places. You talk about it in Des Moines?
Yeah, Des Moines. I'm reading the article from the Des Moines paper, and they were having Asian celebration. It's called Celebration in Des Moines. And they talked about a large group of teenagers come into their festival. They were fighting. They were destroying property. They were harassing the vendors and the people and trying to enjoy the festival. And so I'm thinking, is this an Asian? Like, are these Asian kids doing this? Got on the phone, picked up the phone. Hey, what's going on there? Bunch of black kids went to the fair and did nothing but create violence and mayhem.
Okay, we'll pick this up on the other side. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Deanna, and our guest has been Colin Flaherty, and we've been talking about his book, Don't Make the Black Kids Angry. And one of the, and of course, you should buy it, absolutely buy this book, and visit whitegirlbleedalot.com and subscribe to that website. One of the things that, I know we were talking about something else, Des Moines, before we were talking, but I wanted to cover something else. In December of 2013, Eric Holder, decided to file hate crime charges against a white man in Texas for allegedly playing the knockout game against a black man. After all of these incidences that you talk about throughout the book, about the knockout games that are played, and then all of a sudden he's going to file charges against a white guy. And while they ignore hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of incidents of black against white crime, the same crime.
Well, the guy in Texas was just sentenced, and he is a 100% idiot. He said he wanted to prove that, you know, that the press ignores black on white crime. So he did it by finding an old black guy and hurting him. And so there's a lot of crazy people on this planet. It kind of goes back to what we were saying earlier about how crazy people are about race. Oh, one thing about the black on Asian violence, mm-hmm. in San Francisco, they call that their dirty little secret, the enormous amount of black on Asian violence in the Bay Area.
Mm. And there's a lot of Asian people in San Francisco.
Very successful. Tell you what, if you feel like you're feel like you're getting tired when at the end of your 7-hour day, go to San Francisco, go to the Bay Area, meet some of my friends. I have a lot of them there. I go there a lot. They're doing 11, 12, 13-hour days. Their English is poor. They're all very successful. They're working their
buns. They are.
They really are. What models they are for us.
Indeed.
They're happy as can be and having the chance to do it.
I want to go back to Black Beach Week. What they put in bottles and the mess and the trash that they leave, that was astounding.
You know, there's a lot of places where they have a Black Beach Week, and it's always the same. Hyper-violence, large levels of violence, mountains and mountains of trash and litter, none of it in trash cans. And every town they go to, their town always tries to figure out a way to run them out of town. And they always come back and say, you're just doing this because we're black. And the people come back and say, we're doing this because you're a bunch of ignorant people who are destroying our town. The biggest one is Miami Beach. I mean, there are 400,000 black people go there for Memorial Day every year. A couple years ago, they decided, listen, we cannot let people ruin our town on the level they're doing it, the crime, the violence, the property destruction, defiance of police. So now every Memorial Day, they turn Miami Beach into an armed camp, complete with lights, dogs, horses, army of cops. Guess what? They do the same thing in Indianapolis during the Indiana Black Expo. So,
wow. Well, what a book.
I thought we were just getting started here.
We are, but so I guess we'll just have to have you back. Thank you so very much for your work and for your views on this and for exposing something that needs to be exposed. And thank you for being on the program.
Hey, thank you for what you're doing. An honor to be here.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, listeners. Buy that book.